Welcome to another episode of Cohen's Corner. This week, Elizabeth and I will dive into the slew of Mets injuries that they were somehow able to overcome and win their first series in Atlanta since 2017. We'll also talk about the no-hitters across baseball and also give each other a couple trivia questions that are pretty Mets-related, but we'll see what we know about the team and their players. So, Elizabeth, how are you this week?
I'm doing well, yes. It's hard for me to overstate just how injured the Mets are. The New York Mets are extremely injured right now. It's actually over half of their opening day roster is currently on the injured list. And I won't even go through all the names on the injured list because it'll just depress me. So needless to say, I was completely shocked that they even won two games in Atlanta this week. I think thought they might have a chance to sweep, which they ended up not doing thanks to Ronald Acuna Jr.'s first walk-off home run of his career. But yeah, I have to say, like, the whole injury situation, I mean, the thing is, the Mets aren't the only team dealing with this. There's a lot of teams, injuries are up, I think, around baseball in general. So I think Marcus Stroman said it well in a press conference like last week when, you know, no one's going to feel sorry for the Mets no matter how many players they have injured, because a lot of teams are dealing with this. Dodgers have a lot of players injured. Pretty much every team has, like, you know, with that said, all said and done, they've been doing a pretty good job of winning games and not just like laying down and dying on when they have, you know, lineups with Tomas Nito batting fifth, Jose Peraza batting sixth, you know, guys who the bottom third of their lineup having like one at bat in their career. You know, when Khalil Lee, who still has yet to make contact in his major league career, is batting higher than ninth, there's an issue. Clearly, that's not your number one lineup. No offense to Khalil Lee, who's made some great catches so far, but he's clearly not ready for the big leagues in terms of hitting. So, yeah, it's been interesting. It's in some ways, these games have been almost a little extra entertaining just because I'm, like, so unfamiliar with some of the players that I just don't know kind of what their tendencies are. I have to say, I know Tomas Nito has had some really clutch hits this week, which have been fantastic, but I've also actually been really impressed with Jose Peraza. I feel like he's played a really good second base in place of McNeil. And he's also made contact, I feel like, in pretty much every at-bat. I don't think I've seen him strike out once. Maybe he has, but at least in my mind, I feel like the guys who are coming up who have major league experience and are filling in are doing a really good job of putting the bat on the ball, which, you know, as we've seen, not every team's defense is stellar. So, you know, sometimes I feel like the guys on the bench are doing a really good job of, you know, like I said, just making contact consistently, and that has helped keep the Mets in a lot of games. They haven't been striking out as much as I thought they might. But, you know, with that said, obviously still clearly not at full strength, or like not even half full strength. So it's been interesting the last like couple of weeks just to watch the Mets really like patch together every single game.
Yeah, it's been surprising. And I mean, when Acuna hit that walk-off home run, I mean, obviously it was disappointing. But usually I'm pretty pissed off and I'm thinking about why we lost this game and all kinds of things are rushing through my head. But really last night I wasn't that upset, because to still take 2 of 3 from Atlanta with the depleted team that we have, I think I tweeted out the other day that we're basically playing with the Binghamton Rumble Ponies roster. I mean, in spring training, if you had told us that Cameron Maben was going to be batting third for us a month and a half into the season and we'd still be in first place and that'd be in the middle of a series where we're taking 2 out of 3 from the Braves in Atlanta, I would have told you you're crazy. But yeah, it's nuts, and it's been nice to see these guys filling in. It reminds me a little bit of the Yankees a couple years ago when they had all the injuries they had, and you had guys like Mike Talkman and Mike Ford stepping up, and Cameron Maben got traded to them, played well. I mean, there have been teams that have been able to overcome injuries, and it just shows that, yes, the front office may not have made as many flashy moves as some people in the fan base may have hoped for in Steve Cohen's first offseason, but the depth that they acquired and just the way that they kind of prepared themselves for injuries, maybe not injuries of this magnitude. I mean, nobody could have expected these many injuries at one time this early in the season, but the depth that they've built, it's really showing itself. And I mean, thoughts and prayers out to Kevin Pillar with what he went through this week, but like, he's another guy that they signed and he's like a fourth outfielder that's really contributing when he's on the field, and he could be starting for a lot of teams. And just like, they're calling up Brandon Drury this weekend, and he's another guy that, you know, he's been around for a while, but he's a great guy to be able to just pull from AAA. In the past, the Mets had to rely on guys like Eric Campbell to pull and have him bat third, fourth, fifth, sixth in their lineup. And now at least they have quality guys to call up, and they're really – it's getting thin. I mean, these injuries are really getting ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's interesting that you mentioned – I feel like the depth that they've built has definitely been tested in that, you know, we now have – like the third or fourth string fourth outfielders are coming into play. And yeah, just to reference Kevin Pillar, that I don't want to like get into the whole like gruesome incident too much, but I have to say, like, his whole like getting hit in the face situation was absolutely like the worst thing I have ever seen happen live at a baseball game. And it really brought me back, unfortunately, to when David Wright got hit in the head in 2009 against Matt Cain. And, you know, my dad and I always said that we might be being overdramatic with this, but I kind of feel like David Wright was almost never the same after he got hit in the head. Again, I might be like dramatizing it, but that was just such a horrific thing to, for me as, you know, a 12-year-old to have watched live on TV. And Kevin Pillar's hit by pitch was a lot more gory. And, you know, hopefully he's okay. I've been super impressed with how tough he was to even, like, be in the dugout the next game. He delivered the lineup card to the umpires. And, you know, it's funny. I feel like Pillar was a guy that the fan base, myself included, was really slandering after, like, seven games just because he, like, hadn't gotten that many hits yet because he'd barely played. And, you know, over the last several weeks with Nimmo out and him playing every day, he's been soon anticipated to even be a regular starting, you know, everyday player. But, you know, we forget Kevin Pillar is an everyday player his whole career. And, you know, he had a good season for the Giants. He played for the Red Sox. He's been a solid, and the Toronto Blue Jays also, where he was teammates with Stroman. He's had a really solid career. And so I don't know what I expected of him when the Mets signed him, because I wasn't sure he'd even be playing that much. But yeah, it's really a shame for him to go down when their outfield depth is already extremely thin. You know, I don't know when. We haven't heard much about Albert Almora's status recently. I don't know if that's really been addressed in press conferences. I'm assuming whenever he's ready to some degree, we'll hear about it. But I don't really think that's been asked over the last, you know, week or so about his shoulder and how he's doing. So, yeah, prayers up for Kevin Pillar. Hopefully he can come back just as strong as he was before and see how what the Mets outfield looks like over the weekend, because I truly have no idea who's going to be out there.
Same thing, probably Jinesh Schwefargus and Khalil Lee.
Fargus, I like. I have a sense.
Yeah, I like him too. He's a likable guy.
I've always been a fan of him. And yeah, he hit for the cycle in spring training a couple years ago. That was impressive. I know it was spring training, but I feel like he can put the bat on the ball. I don't think he's, even though, you know, he's a new major leaguer, I don't think he's going to be an automatic out. He's gotten a couple of hits already. So, you know, is he everyone's first choice for starting outfielder in May? Not necessarily, but no. I wouldn't count him out as someone who could contribute in the short term.
Yeah, definitely. I think he can. I mean, it's very obvious that Khalil Lee's bat is not close at all to being ready to play in the major leagues. But I mean, his glove has really showed out. He made two nights in a row. He made a hell of a play in right field. So, I mean, the glove is really standing out, and he's got that speed, and the Mets could really use that. Some good defense and speed, and the Mets have honestly been one of the best defensive teams in baseball this year. If you look at defensive run saves, I think they're like second in baseball, and it's mainly just due to their shifting. And it feels like
I was shocked
whenever
when
they
I saw
shift,
that
like
earlier,
wherever but Peraza is, I feel like whenever he's up the middle, they hit it right to him. Like they're always shifted perfectly. And that's a lot of the analytics that they're bringing into the organization now. And it's making them shift more, whether you agree with the shift or not, it works. Like it 100% works. So for whatever reason, major league players don't seem to be able to hit the ball the other way. That's a story or a topic for another day, but yeah, I don't know. But it is very exciting that they were able to take 2 of 3 from the Braves, and they're still in first place, and the Phillies lost again today. So, yeah, I think they're a game and a half in first place going to Miami. And, I mean, they should, if they're able to do that to the Braves, I don't see why they can't have a successful series against the Marlins as well.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit early to be, like, scoreboard watching, you know, this early in the season, but I always find myself doing that every year, no matter how bad or good the Mets are, and definitely hoping if whoever's playing like the Phillies and the Braves, if the Mets can just like stay afloat in terms of not getting, I know, either keeping their lead in first place or just not getting too far back over the next few weeks, I think they'll be in a good spot when people finally do come back. Definitely some, you know, even with everyone getting injured, there's also been like some encouraging news over the last week as well, with Noah Syndergaard and Seth Lugo making rehab starts. I know Syndergaard, I think, pitched 4 innings in his, and Lugo, I think, only pitched 1 inning, but I mean, he's going to be a reliever anyway, so that makes sense. But, you know, good to hear about them hopefully being on the horizon. I'd have to think, I like would not be shocked if Syndergaard comes back before Carrasco at this point. I mean, we haven't really heard anything about Carrasco's progress. I don't really know, you know, I just haven't heard anything about like him actually progressing to the level of rehab starts over the next few weeks. So logic tells me that he's farther behind than Noah Syndergaard at this point. So I think you know, hopefully Syndergaard's only like three. He could potentially be like 3 weeks away, I would have to think.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that return date is. I mean, they said mid-June. It's, wow, it's almost the end of May at this point. So I would not be surprised at all if he comes back before Carlos Carrasco, which would be an absolutely welcome sign. I think, you know, Mets fans are chomping at the bit for not only him to come back, but just for the team to be hopefully a little bit more full strength. So definitely encouraged by the reports we've heard about him. And Lugo coming back would be fantastic as well. I mean, the bullpen has largely held its own, but with that said, it could absolutely use another dominant arm like Seth Lugo.
Could definitely someone, more. Because think last night or the night, whatever.
You can never have too many good arms. You can never, I mean, that's what we've learned. You can never have too much pitching. We've learned that this year with the Mets, you know, pitching depth being tested, especially in the rotation. But Lugo will be very much welcome when he comes back.
Yeah, and think if you had Lugo last night or you have him in your bullpen, I mean, you don't have to use Jacob Barnes for a second consecutive inning last night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just changes a lot of things, because when you use Diaz 3 days in a row or Familia's been used too much, whatever the case may be, that way you have another reliever to go to. Like, you can never have too many relievers, especially with injuries. But, I mean, with the way how shaky relievers can be, I mean, you can definitely never have enough. But, yeah, it should be a good weekend for them. And DeGrom had a minor league rehab assignment today in low A, where he's touching 102 miles an hour, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, the Palm Beach – what was it, the Palm Beach Cardinals?
They're funny. Their Twitter account's funny.
They definitely win the night for me in terms of tweets, because they were just like – Jason, they were like – we've had less than 24 hours to prepare for Jacob DeGrom. And then they were tweeting during his start, like, DeGrom is throwing 102 miles an hour, send help. And I was tempted to respond like narrator, no one sent help. I mean, I think he only pitched like 3 or 4 innings, but yeah. I mean, look, hopefully if he's ready to pitch in a rehab start, hopefully he can come back as soon as possible, because obviously this Mets rotation sorely misses him. And I also thought it was cute how, I don't know if you saw this, but I think like a bunch of the minor leaguers in the St. Lucie clubhouse took pictures with DeGrom before the game. I think like Jacob Resnick tweeted like 4 or 5 pictures in a row of people posing with him. And apparently he bought them all Chick-fil-A dinner before the game too. So I'm sure that they're very excited by the presence of Jacob DeGrom, 3-time All-Star, 2-time Cy Young Award winner in the clubhouse today. So, you know, hopefully this is just a tune-up and that he's actually good to go, and that hopefully he doesn't have any more kind of nagging injuries in the near future. But
help should be on the way soon.
Yes,
especially even JD Davis should be back soon too, and hopefully
hopefully. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Nimmo had some sort of setback with his finger, like, I don't really know.
Yeah, we haven't heard much since then,
but Davis at least has played this week rather. So, you know, hopefully, and you know, like, BR has done a fantastic job filling in for JD at third, but so it would be tough to like take VR out of the lineup just because of the speed he brings. But with that said, I mean, JD's bat will be invaluable to this team, especially with several other regulars still out. Like, I don't –
They'll find playing time for – because VR –
is there any chance they use him
over McNeil? They'll put VR at second when JD comes back.
Or over Peraza, you
sit,
mean?
Well, they'll sit Peraza. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. They'll wait till McNeil comes back, but they'll put VR at second until he does over Peraza. And then Peraza will just go to a bench utility role.
Yeah. I mean, is there any – didn't I read somewhere that VR could, like, play the outfield in an emergency? I don't know, like,
he's played center field. He's played center field.
I feel like you might see him in a corner spot, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if they use him there.
They'll probably use him in center,
I mean,
put him in a corner.
Oh, you think?
Because of his speed. Yeah, he's played center before.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well, hey, look, jack of all trades, Jonathan VR. Like, someone's got to keep up the ER glory while Kevin Pillar is out, because we have to have, as when they're batting back to back in the lineup, there is just no more lethal combination, as we have learned this year and never expected to say out loud. So definitely, you know, again, I was also like slandering VR the first week of the season.
You hated him.
I really did. I don't know. He also didn't look good in spring training.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
I know.
We learned this in kindergarten.
I feel like I was still judging VR maybe subconsciously by his very uncompetitive at bats against Jacob DeGrom last year, which in hindsight is ridiculous, because like most people have uncompetitive at bats against DeGrom, including Freddie Freeman, who won the MVP last year. So that was very unfair of me. I would like to publicly apologize to Jonathan VR, who I'm sure is not listening to this, but
I hope we can get him as a guest once, and I can tell him how much you hated him in the beginning.
But okay, then I would come back and say how much I love him now and how many enthusiastic all caps VR texts I've sent in the last few weeks. It's a lot of them. I can go back, send to you, send to my other friends, send to my dad, plenty of Jonathan VR !! texts. Hopefully can make up for any slander that I doled out in the first week of the season. He has been a godsend on the base paths. He's played very well in the field and obviously with the bat. So thank you, Jonathan VR, for doing Kevin Pillar and all Ilars proud.
All right, very good. I'm glad you got that off your chest. Now, I know you're very excited to get into this trivia, so
I am.
Get into it.
Yes, so Jake and I thought of this a while ago because we I think it was like before or after recording one day, we had a couple of like random trivia questions that we asked each other. And we kind of thought it would be fun to have a live trivia question session on the podcast. So for this week's episode, Jake and I both prepared some trivia questions for each other. We do not know what questions the other one is prepared to ask the other person. I was recently made aware that I prepared several more questions than Jake did. So this could be
I thought this was going to be like
one-sided.
Bam, done segment.
It can be wrong. It absolutely can be. So
we'll think next week you won't have to come up with.
Well, that's true. I can save some for another time.
Exactly.
But so we could ask like three each. That makes sense. But yeah, so not too much structure to this. I guess someone will win. I don't know. We never really thought this through, but we're each going to ask each other some Mets related questions, kind of tailored to our general sphere of knowledge about the Mets. So I don't think, unless I'm wrong, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's any like super obscure questions about like the Mets bench in 1979, which I have to say I'm not well versed on, but
yes. What I have a very obscure question. What hospital was Tomas Nito born in?
I literally have no idea. I'm sorry, Tomas.
Neither do I. And I think if I did know, that'd be very weird.
I don't really know if that information's like publicly available, but
no, I mean, I guess
maybe it is. I'm really not sure.
That's true.
All
right, go ahead.
Anyway, so we're not going to get too obscure.
Okay.
So Jake, I know that you've said that your favorite player of all time is David Wright, which makes sense. He's a lot of Mets fans' favorite player of all time. So I have a few David Wright-themed questions here for you. I would like to preface, I personally don't think these are that hard. So if you like know them right away, then I'll just like move on. So, okay. One thing, actually, this is topical. I believe it was a couple of days ago was the 15-year anniversary of David Wright's famous walk-off against Mariano Rivera in 2006. Who scored the winning run
when
Wright hit that walk-off single
Aduka.
Against Rivera.
Cash it in.
I knew you
would know this.
I knew you would know this. See, I actually didn't know that before. I watched the video.
Cash it in.
I knew you would. I had a feeling you would know that one. Okay.
Oh, yeah, he ran across home plate, jumping. Yeah, okay, I know it. Hit me with another one. I want another one.
I forget if I watched See, now I'm worried these are too easy, because I know you, like, love it. I'll have to ask you a DeGrom one.
I just know my shit. Come on,
now. Okay. I respect that. Okay.
Thank you.
Against which team did Wright make his famous one-hand, barehanded catch in 2005?
That would be the San Diego Padres.
That is correct. And I believe it was at Petco Park as well. By the way, completely unbiased, I firmly believe, and I believe I'm right about this, that barehanded catch by David Wright is like the greatest catch I've ever seen. And like maybe one of the greatest catches of all time. I'm sure everyone listening to this has probably seen it, but if you haven't, look it up immediately because it is spectacular and it will never get old. Okay. So you got those both right. Let's see. What's another good one? See, I feel like you're going to know this. You're probably going to know all of these.
I hope I do know all of them. That doesn't mean they're bad questions.
Okay. Here's a multiple choice question that hopefully presents a bit of a challenge. Which of the following categories is David Wright not the Mets all-time leader in? Hits, home runs, doubles, or runs scored?
I know he definitely has the most hits. I'm going to go doubles.
Incorrect.
Ah!
The Mets all-time leader in home runs as a Met is Darryl Strawberry.
Darryl Strawberry. Damn it. That's what I thought. But I thought he passed Strawberry. How many Strawberry have? Like 200 what?
As a Met, he had 252. Okay. Wright, as a Met, had, I think, 242. Mm-hmm, so Wright was like 10 away. Wright was 11 away from becoming the all-time leader.
Damn, I knew if it wasn't doubles that it was Strawberry had him in home runs.
On baseball reference. Yeah, Strawberry, as a Met, Strawberry had 252. Wright had 242. And then Mike Piazza is third. Okay. All right. So I stumped you on that one. So if you want to redeem yourself, I can ask another one.
Yeah, or go
you
ahead. Can ask give me another one. Give me another one.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. I have a DeGrom question, which you will probably know, but I thought I would throw you a bone here. I feel like you'll know this. So before Jacob DeGrom won the NL Rookie of the Year in 2014, who was the last Mets player before him to win the award? And bonus points if you know what year.
Doc Gooden, 1984.
That's correct. That is correct. Daryl Strawberry also won it the year before in 83. So there you go. You redeemed yourself. All right, I have some other right questions here, which I feel like
that was a good question. I like that one. That was a good question.
There you go.
That was good. All right. My turn. Oh, you ready?
All right. I'm getting nervous. Okay, sure. Hopefully I don't embarrass myself.
Okay, you ready? What Mets pitcher got the first win at Citi Field?
I feel like I should know this. I attended the first game at Citi Field, which was started by Mike Pelfrey, which they did not win. So it wasn't him, I don't think. Who pitched in 2009? Was it? I don't know this off the top of my head. Who is even on the team then? I don't even see. 2009 was like such a blur of like, I don't even remember anyone.
You want a hint?
Sure.
He's a pitcher that Mets fans, there's mixed feelings on him.
Oh, was it Ollie P?
Yes.
Okay. I should have known that. As soon as you said mixed feelings, I was like, I know who it is. I forgot he was on the team in 09 though. You're right. I think he pitched for them till 2010.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Next question. This is a David Wright question.
Okay.
What year did David Wright hit a home run in the All-Star game?
He was an All-Star like six times, I think
less than that.
Five or six. Hit a home run in the All-Star game. Was it 2006?
It was. Do you know what stadium it was in?
It was at PNC Park.
Correct. Very good.
I only know that because I looked up some stuff about the Home Run Derby that year, which then I remembered was at PNC Park. I didn't remember that before, like 2 days ago, just to clarify. But I remember he was in 06 for sure, so I couldn't remember what other years.
All right, ready for
I have a follow-up question. Who did he hit off of? Because I don't know that. Do you know?
No, I should know, but I don't.
Okay. I'll look it up in the meantime. Actually, no, I won't because I might like spoil another question you're going to ask. So I'll look it up.
You won't, but I'll ask you this anyway. Yeah, won't spoil it.
All right, ask the next one.
What pitcher did Jacob DeGrom hit his only collegiate home run against?
For sale. Come on.
All right, see? All right, good. That was the easiest one. I should have given you that one first.
Everyone knows that. I mean, okay.
You'd be surprised. I should preface,
not like literally everyone knows that, but I definitely knew that.
Okay, good. I know you got more questions. Throw a couple more at me.
Okay.
That's your thing. You love coming up with trivia questions.
I love trivia. I don't think I've emphasized that enough on the podcast so far, how much I love trivia. Okay, here's another one. I feel like you'll probably know this, but okay. In which seasons did David Wright win a Gold Glove Award? He won two Gold Gloves.
2007 and 2008?
That is correct.
Nice.
Those are the only two. I think he also won the Silver Slugger those 2 years as well. I don't remember. I didn't look that up, but yeah, I thought he won in 06 too. I don't know who won in 06. Maybe Zimmerman.
I think Chipper might have won it.
Oh, I forgot Chipper was still playing. You're right. Yeah, so 07 and 08, he won the Gold Glove. Let's see. What else you got?
Hit me.
Ooh, here's a good one. I don't know if you'll know this. Okay, this is a two-part question. You'll probably know the first part, and you may not know the second part. This is a DeGrom question. Okay. Jacob DeGrom pitched a one-hit shutout on July 17th, 2016. First part of the question, who was he facing?
Phillies?
That is correct. I believe it was at Citizens Bank Park. Extra bonus points. Do you know who got the only hit for the Phillies in that game?
Cole Hamels.
No.
It was a pitcher, though, wasn't it?
It was a pitcher, but it was – unless I'm wrong about this, it wasn't Cole Hamels.
I think that was an R.A. Dickey one-hitter. Cole Hamels got the only hit. But I know it was a pitcher. But wait, let me think before you tell me. You know who it is?
Yes.
Well-known guy or like a lesser-known guy?
He's still pitching today. Fair, like, not extremely obscure.
Trying to think.
He's in the Phillies rotation currently.
Oh, he's still in the Phillies rotation.
Yeah, so you have like five, you're like two choices.
Oh, no, I know. Zach Eflin.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
There's nothing more annoying than an opposing pitcher breaking up a no-hitter. I mean, there's a few things more annoying, but that's one of the most annoying things.
All right, I want more. I know you got more. I like this.
I have. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, these are all like David Wright and Jacob DeGrom questions.
It's fine. Throw them at me.
Okay, but I feel like the right ones are now like, some of these are going to be too easy.
Why? Maybe I won't know.
Okay. This one you'll probably know. Who was the Mets' starting third baseman immediately before Wright was first called up in 2004?
That'd be my main man, Ty Wigington.
There you go. I was reading his book this week, and I didn't realize, but apparently at the time, Ty Wigington was batting like 340 in June, and they still put Wright in third base.
How good. I'm reading that book, too. I'm almost done with it.
Oh, really? I'm like a fourth of the way done, but I'm loving it so far. I mean, it's interesting.
I won't spoil anything for you, but like it gets good.
Spoilers, he gets hurt. Oh, I don't know.
No, but like you learn some insight. It's good. Like you learn some stuff that you wouldn't otherwise know.
Oh, interesting. I'm excited to read, because I feel like I'm still at like pretty much the beginning, so I've only gotten kind of through his like, you know, just getting called up to the Mets part. I just read the part where this isn't really like a spoiler, but he talks about how he used to like have to carry Cliff Floyd's luggage like in hotels and away, and but also how like Joe McEwing was like super nice to him, which
he's
I like
a
knew
dad to him.
I like knew that in passing, but that section of the chapter was extremely sweet when he's talking about how Joe McEwing and his wife like invited him over for dinner.
Yeah, and we like, put him dinner like every week.
That was like the sweetest thing ever. I watched an interview with Joe McEwing a while ago, and yeah, he's still in baseball. He's working as, I think he's the White Sox third base coach, but I mean, it's, I feel like. Yeah, he's one of those Mets that everyone like fondly remembers, even though obviously, you know, he was never kind of the best at anything he was doing, but he was very adequate and very good at a lot of different things, which as we've seen on the Mets this year, is extremely valuable. If you can play multiple positions well and hit a decent amount, then you'll always have a spot in the big leagues. So good for Joe McEwing, and glad he treated David Wright so well.
Yeah. All right. What else? Let's do a couple more and then we'll talk about the no-hitters.
I feel like you'll probably, okay. I'll ask like one more David Wright, and then I'll ask one of the other DeGrom questions. Okay, you'll probably know this. At which road ballpark did David Wright hit the most home runs in his career?
Citizens Bank Park.
That is correct. I think I forgot to look this up. I think he had 22 at Citizens Bank Park. Second to that was Turner Field, the Braves old ballpark, which I think he hit 19 at. So, I mean, it makes sense. I feel like some of his most well-known home runs were at Citizens Bank Park. I know the one he hit in 2015 when he came back from the disabled list and hit a home run in his first at-bat, like in September, was at Citizens Bank Park. He had a couple of other pretty notable ones there too, but that makes sense. Yeah, I feel like these DeGrom ones are not that hard.
I mean, one more DeGrom one, then we'll move on.
I feel like you'll probably know this. I'm not going to give you choices unless you need it. Besides baseball, what was DeGrom's other major sport in high school?
That's a tough one. Basketball?
Yes, that is correct.
I'm just thinking because he's tall and lanky. So I mean,
that makes, if you think about his body type, basketball like definitely makes sense. I mean, he could have played football, I guess, but.
Well, not that string bean body.
Yeah, probably. He would have, yeah. I mean, you never know. Let's never underestimate him. He can do, and I'm sure he can play. I mean, he's the most athletic person on the field in any game. So I would never underestimate the athletic ability of Jacob DeGrom. But yes, that is correct. He played basketball in high school. And I knew this because I read an article a while ago, actually, about DeGrom and I think it was like his high school basketball coach. This was an article by Justin Toscano, who we've had on the podcast before. Shout out to Justin. Who wrote
friend
about
of the pod, big friend of the pod,
big friend of the pod, who wrote about an interesting article a while ago about DeGrom playing basketball in high school. And apparently he was very good, which I'm not surprised by. I know SNY did some fun, like promotional videos a while ago with DeGrom and, Steven Matz, like playing horse, like basketball in the clubhouse, which are very fun. I'm a real sucker for like promotional clips with players playing silly games. Those are like the things I always go back to in the off season to rewatch when I miss the Mets. So yes, he clearly outdid Matz in both of those videos that from what I recall. So not surprised to hear he was good at basketball. But yes, that is correct. That's basically all I had here. So
cool,
right.
That was fun.
I didn't keep track of like how many we got right, by the way. So I have no idea.
I got one wrong, and you just needed help on the Ollie P question. Other than that, everything was right.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, you knew most of them. So I think the only one you got wrong was the David Wright home run. Yeah,
the home run one.
Which was hard. That was hard. I guess maybe spend a decent amount of time poring over Mets all-time leaders on Baseball Reference, but
yeah.
Hopefully not too much time. But yeah, that was fun. Maybe next time we can think of like another theme. I feel like it's easier to come up with questions when you have like a theme. Otherwise, yeah, there's almost like too much to choose from. So yeah, feel free to hit me with some more questions.
I will.
Whenever we come up, we do this segment again. But
yeah, fun times, fun.
Go trivia.
But yeah, so before we get out of here, why don't we talk about the craziness that is the 6 no-hitters that have already been thrown in Major League Baseball. And it's a little past the halfway mark of May, and there's already been 6 no-hitters. And I think the record is 7 in a season, and we've already got 6. It's crazy. And to think that all 6 no-hitters have come against 3 teams, the Indians, the Mariners, and the Rangers. All 3 of them have been hit no-hit 2 times, which is kind of nuts. But what's your thoughts on the whole no-hitter situation?
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Well, I also think that this is the first season ever where there's been 3 teams that were no-hit twice each. I think the only other time or the last time this happened was in 2015 when both the Mets and the Dodgers were no-hit twice, and they both made it to the playoffs. So clearly this isn't an indication of, you know, overall team strength, although this year we know the Mariners and the Rangers haven't been super competitive so far. But yeah, in 2015, the Mets were no-hit by, was it Chris Heston?
Chris Heston and Max Scherzer.
I forget who the Dodgers were no-hit by, but yeah, it's been interesting. I feel like, you know, I was really excited for that first one when Joe Musgrove got his no-hitter, because I was like, oh, thank God the Padres finally have one. I was excited for Carlos Rodon because it was almost a perfect game, and those are very rare. And it's interesting also, too, how many of this year's no-hitters have been nearly perfect games. I believe the first 4 no-hitters thrown by Musgrove, Rodon, who was it, John Means, and who was the 4th one? I'm like already. Oh, Wade Miley. Wade Miley. I think they were all like one. I don't think that any of those pitchers walked anyone in those games, or at least 3 of them. They were all like a hit batsman or like an error or a drop third strike or something away from being a perfect game, which is also pretty miraculous. But yeah, it's interesting. It's like, you know, by the time like Corey Kluber threw a no hitter the other day, I was like, all right, like, this is getting a little bit ridiculous, but like, good for Corey Kluber. And it was also against the team that traded for him from the Indians, where he only threw like 1 inning.
And the Rangers were giving away Corey Kluber bobbleheads?
Oh my God. That reminded me of like when the Mets had like Marlon Byrd bobblehead or Marlon Byrd like t-shirt night on the night they traded him for something.
Yeah.
So that's like a very Mets move. I feel like the Mets would give out like a bobblehead of a player that then pitched a no hitter against them. But yeah, it's interesting. It's like, you know, I don't know. You know, we saw a huge kind of uptick in home runs and offense over the last couple of years. And, you know, I don't know if like, it's just the fact that the ball has completely gone the other way and now it's a lot harder to hit. Although, I mean, we've definitely seen, I don't know, the Mets have certainly hit some balls this year that like I thought were for sure home runs that haven't gone out. I also don't know if it has anything to do with just extreme increased propensity for strikeouts, which maybe causes hitters to swing more for the fences and just like strike out more and miss the ball and not make contact.
That's what I think it is.
You know, I don't know if it's all like the ball not being juiced that is causing no hitters, because I feel like people would still be making contact.
Yeah, that exactly.
It doesn't cause people to miss the ball. Like, that doesn't cause people,
I think,
to
it's just
not
get a hit. Of things. It's the fact that pitchers, how many guys now are able to throw in the upper 90s with dirty secondary pitches and off-speed pitches? And I mean, yes, the new ball. And yeah, and also guys are just, it's home run or strike out. I mean, it's pretty, there's not that much in between anymore. I mean, it's really turned into a lot of all or nothing approaches at the plate. So, I mean, when you put all that together, it kind of makes sense why there's been these no hitters. And again, it's really only those 3 teams so far, but a lot of pitchers have low ERAs and really good stats. And this year could really end up going down as the year of the pitcher.
Right. I mean, I think the last like quote unquote year of the pitcher that I can remember was in 2012, which I think was also the last year that there were perfect games thrown. I think there were like 3 perfect games thrown in 2012, and there have been none since then. But that at least in like my lifetime, was kind of the most notable year of the pitcher, quote unquote. Obviously, the kind of most famous year of the pitcher, at least in the modern era, was 1968, after which the mound was actually lowered. I mean, 1968 was the year Bob Gibson had a 1.12 ERA. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that people thought, you know, and most people think like that figure is going to be extremely difficult for any starting pitcher to ever come near ever again. So even with the kind of increased strikeouts that, that pitchers are getting in these coming years. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting because, you know, like I said, after 1968, there were kind of concrete changes made to give hitters advantages, meaning lowering the mound. And I don't really know, like, what I'm trying to think of what, like, the most feasible change that would be made next would be if they're, you know, I don't know.
They're going to do something. They're going to move back the mound.
I've heard of the, like, the mound being moved back, which, you know, it's been 60 feet, 6 inches forever. So maybe it'll be 61 feet next year. I'm not really sure, but I would not be surprised, especially with all the tinkering that's been going on in rules and MLB, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen that with like the extra innings and the double headers and everything. So clearly there's, you know, not as much set in stone in the rule book as we thought there might be. So yeah, I would not be surprised to see if there's some sort of rule implemented next year, or, you know, maybe not, maybe it'll just stop after six and we won't, and maybe at the end of the season, we'll barely remember how many no hitters were thrown in April and May. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I do think though, like, even if there's been a lot more no hitters than have ever happened, I think this is also, even though the record for a full season is seven, but I do think that the six that have been thrown have been like, this is the fastest that we've ever gone to six in a baseball season.
You can honestly count it as seven if you count
Madison Bumgarner. Exactly. So I do think though, like, you know, yes, there've been a lot of no hitters this year, and if it's not your team, I think you care less perhaps when there's that many. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I heard that like Spencer Turnbull was throwing a no hitter the other day, and like I didn't even turn on the game because I was like, I don't know. That sounds terrible of me, but I was also like going to bed at the time, so I was like, I'm not gonna like interrupt my whole nighttime routine just to turn on this no hitter, which normally I would totally do, but for whatever reason, it just didn't capture my attention the same way.
Because it's happening more often, which kind of
right
takes a little bit of the pizzazz and the value out of it.
Right, but I also think though, like, yes. But like with that said, though, I feel like if it's your team, then it doesn't matter how many have been thrown. Like if the Mets threw a no-hitter this year, no matter how many other no-hitters there have been, Mets fans would be like over the moon celebrating, you know? Definitely. So I think the intrigue for like the casual fan might be less if there's a ton of no-hitters being thrown, you know, if there's like, you know, three or four more thrown this year. But I think that like for the fans of the team, the appeal is still definitely there, especially for fans. You know, like the Orioles last no-hitter was like years ago,
yeah,
before John Means threw one. And, you know, the Yankees last no-hitter before Corey Kluber was 1999, I think.
Yeah,
so, you know, which isn't comparatively that long ago. But, you know, I think it's interesting, though, because, like, you know, no matter how many no-hitters cumulatively are thrown, I still think the kind of intensity of actually watching one unfold is still there. You know, the drama of actually watching a pitcher pitch a no hitter, I think will still be there, even if the interest to tune in for the casual fan or for, you know, the dedicated baseball fan who's been following all of this might be a little bit less. But
yeah, I don't think it takes anything away from the individual
accomplishment. And it's still a huge accomplishment.
The attention that it gets and like the overall excitement that it generates, it's just not the same as it would have been, say, even 2-3 years ago, just with the amount of strikeouts that we see now in the game and the amount of, like, there's some games, like, for example, the Giants had 19 runs they scored today. But so it happens from time to time, but there's so many, even the beginning of the season, look how many low-scoring games there are. And that's really not what baseball wants. And, you know, it's getting a little bad when Clayton Kershaw, arguably the best pitcher of this generation, is saying that the no-hitters probably aren't that good for the game and that MLB's kind of dropping the ball on this. So, I mean, there's players are noticing too. It's not just the fans that are saying that there's not as much value. It's the players and star players are kind of realizing the same things that we are.
Yeah, no, that was interesting that he said that, because, you know, you would think that like pitchers would love it, obviously, if more pitchers were throwing no hitters, because that means that theoretically their chances of throwing one might be higher, or they just have a better chance to do well against especially weaker hitting teams on any given day. But I did think that was interesting that, you know, Kershaw, of all people, kind of said that it's not good for the game. And I agree, you know, I feel like in baseball, you know, people never really want, like, too much of anything. Like, extremes in terms of any category, I feel like, are always seen as bad, which sometimes they are. You know, you don't want too many no-hitters. You don't want too many strikeouts. You don't want too many home runs. There's a lot of things that I feel like baseball's been, at least on the surface, kind of going towards the extremes in recent years. You know, people talk about, like, the three true outcomes with a lot more, you know, strikeouts, home runs, and walks over the last few years. And I feel like, ultimately, you know, the game is in its overall best state when there's just not as many extremes happening. You know, there's not, like, too much of any one thing.
There's more diversity in the
exactly.
game.
Exactly. But I feel like we're seeing so much kind of these extreme outcomes with, you know, a lot of one thing that it's becoming so noticeable. And
it becomes redundant. You want to see something different. You want to be surprised. You don't want to go to the stadium knowing what you're going to see that day. Not saying that people know you're going to see a no-hitter, but a lot of games you go to, I mean, you can just look at sometimes who's pitching or just how bad a lineup is and be like, oh, we're not really going to see that many runs today. And, I mean, you're surprised if there are, but usually you're right. You know what I mean? Like, baseball's become a pretty predictable sport in that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there certainly are kind of less, you know, there's definitely a lot more of kind of, like I said, that three true outcome scenario. There's a lot of walks too. I mean, I was watching a couple of Cardinals games this week for work, and I was kind of astounded at, like, just how many, well, I think that, you know, I mean, we saw in the Cardinals against the Mets, they had like 11, the Cardinals pitchers had like 11 walks against the Mets at one point a couple weeks ago. And I do think, like, I would rather see at this point, I would rather see like a home run than like four walks in an inning, like any day of the week, frankly. So if like that, if one of those two things is going to go up, I'd rather more home runs than like everyone getting walked. But
yeah, definitely.
You know, with that said though, it's like, yes, there's like a lot of extremes happening in baseball, but I feel like there's also, I don't know. There's always new things. Like, baseball's never going to like run out of new things to invent. You know, I feel like every game I watch, there's always something happening that I just have like never seen before, whether it's a miraculous play or just, you know, we're seeing a lot of kind of, we've also seen kind of a lot of interesting umpiring decisions this year as well, which some of which I've never seen called
the
in my years of watching
absolutely
baseball.
Horrific this
but
season.
You know, a lot more like interference calls on the base paths.
Horrible. And did you see that? Did you see the call against Trey Turner at first?
I did. And Davey Martinez should win the Oscar for
his
performance.
And he should. He had every right to do that. That was a horrible, horrible call. He was running straight the whole time. For those that didn't see the play, it was a drop third strike that Wrigley went back. It was a wild pitch, hit the brick wall and came back to the catcher, and Turner was safe by a mile at first, but they said that he interfered with the throw by running out of the baseline, which he clearly didn't. They show on TV he ran straight the entire time, right on the chalk. It was a ridiculous call. Umpires just need to leave their mark, I guess. I don't know. It's getting to be ridiculous at this point.
Right. I mean, yeah, like I said, I've definitely seen a lot more of those, like, interference calls. Yeah, both on the base paths. I mean, there's also – and this is kind of an objective call, but a lot of like catcher's interference too. And maybe this is just James McCann, who I think has been called for like three catcher's interferences so far this
James
year.
James McCann is lucky we did not get to him today.
Notorious.
Because James
for that
McCann
also.
Is frustrating the living hell out of me. He's batting 200. Then Tomas Nito needs to play all the time. I'm over it. Yes, McCann has done some defensive things well. He's not framing that well, but he's throwing guys out and he's been a good leader, but his hitting's been horrible, like absolutely horrible. They should just, I don't know. This can't continue, but they're going to have to play Tomas Nito.
I 100% agree. I mean, yeah.
Not to mention Nito's been swinging a really good bat.
He has been. He's been clutch. He's been, and that's the thing. He's been making contact too. Like Tomas Nito, you know, I don't know what he's batting overall this year, but he has, I feel like I haven't seen him strike out like once. I mean, I'm sure he has, but he's been making consistent contact. I told you, I texted you this, that I absolutely saw his go-ahead home run coming the other day and texted my dad such. I literally said, I think he's going to hit a go-ahead home run, and he actually did, which I've had like some luck calling home runs, but most people's batting average on like calling home runs is like 100.
I told you you should have played the lottery.
I guess I should have. That would have been my night. But yes, I mean, Tomas Nito, again, this year, I feel like is really extra endeared himself to Mets fans with the whole like bench mob mentality.
He's the leader of the bench mob. He's been fantastic.
He's been fantastic. And, you know, he's one of those players that he's still pretty young, but I almost like, I can't remember a Mets team without him at this point. And again, he's only been on the team for a few years, but he's kind of one of those players that you feel like has just always been there, even though factually that's not true. But
yeah, and he's good, and he's surprising a lot of people, but a lot of people don't know this. He won a batting title in the minor leagues. Like he can hit. He's proved in the past that he can hit, and he's very good at framing. He's solid behind the plate, very solid.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. I'd forgotten that. I remember last year, I think he hit like a grand slam in one game and had like six RBIs. I just like went crazy. That was like, but you're right. I feel like he, you know, he's gotten some playing time during his Mets career. He's never been an everyday player, obviously, but you know, I feel like if he got kind of more consistent starts, I think, and we've seen that this week, he got, you know, three, I think he started like 3 out of 4 games and got a bunch of really big hits. And even in the game they lost where he pinch hit, he got a 2-run single to put the Mets ahead for an inning. So he's clearly shown, and you know, not only that, but he's just been a fantastic leader. And, you know, always, I feel like the Mets
great
this year,
teammate. Everyone seems
always
really
pumping up his
guy.
Teammates, always pumping up, you know, his guys like Kevin Pillar, Marcus Stroman, Taijuan Walker, like anytime anyone, Jacob DeGrom, obviously. I think Nito caught DeGrom's strutout, didn't he? Because there was a picture of them together after the game.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he did. And that was DeGrom's, you know, best start of his career where he had 15 strikeouts. So he's definitely been, yeah, someone I didn't – I would say if they're like someone I didn't anticipate necessarily playing a huge role going into the season just
That's
because
the story
I thought –
of the team so far.
I thought McCann would hit more and that we wouldn't be seeing Nito that much. But you know, something else too is like McCann's never really been an everyday player either. So really – it's not like, I mean, yes, they're paying him, you know, 4 years, $40 million, but McCann doesn't really have the track record of being an everyday catcher. And so there's really no reason why Nito shouldn't get more playing time with that said, because, you know, McCann has never really proven he could play 140 games in it, or, you know, 130 games in a season. I think his most games played is like 110 maybe. So there's really no reason why, especially if Nito's playing well, like, and at this point with so many guys injured, you have to just ride the hot bats, and especially if his defense is holding up, like if he's going to be making contact consistently, he absolutely, and I think will be getting more playing time in the coming weeks, hopefully, if he keeps
sure they got to ride the hot hand with the lineup they have right now. They don't
exactly
Rojas doesn't have any other choice but to ride whoever's hot. None of these rest days, nothing. Like Aaron Boone across town does that, and he has these scheduled rest days, well, mainly because his players are made out of glass. But it seems like ours kind of are too.
I mean, let's not be talking about being out of
rest,
glass.
That's what I'm saying, though. At this point, you can't rest somebody that's hot. And that's what I mean. I didn't even understand why McCann played last night. I mean, I don't know, in the last game in Atlanta, I didn't get that with Nito being so hot. At least Nito did get to come up in that big spot.
Right.
But I think you should be prepared to see a lot more of Tomas.
Hopefully. Nito. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, he's just like such an enjoyable social media follow. Like he always posts. I feel like he's really upped his game, you know, in the last few months now that he's. Yeah. Is with like yeah the whole
now that he's gaining some notoriety
exactly
step up his Twitter game
exactly no but he's been, you know, I feel like, and also you see in his interviews too, he just has a really like lighthearted but very focused demeanor. You know, you can tell that he really like he talks about it too. You know, everyone on the bench, you know, back when Kevin Pillar and VR were actually, you know, bench players instead of starting every day, they were really, you know, I think Nito talked about just like the chemistry on the bench and making sure everyone is ready to step in at any point. And they've been living up to that because they've stepped in and done very well. And honestly, the Mets as a team, like, look better now than they did when everyone was healthy. And that's hard to believe, but like they've played much better in May than they did for most of April. So, you know, I don't know what formula you could have like would allow you to arrive at that point, but somehow or other they've managed to basically hit better as a team, I think, in May than they did in April. And, you know, a lot of their regulars have gone on the injured list in May, and they were mostly healthy all through April. So I don't know what math could like lead you to that point other than maybe the intangibles of the chemistry and everyone on the bench. And the fact that, like we said, these players on the bench, like VR and Pillar, are career everyday major leaguers. I mean, VR played 162 games, I think, in 2019. So these aren't guys that like have never played every day. So the Mets bench players that have been filling in are actual like bona fide, like, you know, quality major leaguers. And so I think that's part of the reason why the bench mob has been so successful. And, you know, Guillorme got injured a while ago, but he was, you know, playing that role for a while as well before he got injured. And Almora, too, who we mentioned, hasn't played in a bit because of his shoulder injury. But, you know, everyone has been stepping up. And like I said, the team somehow looks better with half the team injured than they did when everyone was healthy. So I don't know what that says about, like, the team when everyone's healthy. But I kind of have a feeling that, like, I don't know. I feel like in baseball, people always plan. People always wonder, like, oh, how are you going to make room for this person? And then, like, everyone gets injured, and yeah, that's
it tends
how.
To, it tends to work.
It always out. Does. It always. Or we were wondering about, too, the starting rotation. Oh, where's Peterson going to play? Well, now Peterson's, like, the only starting pitcher besides Stroman. Yep. So he got a spot for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically how it's been working out so far. And, you know, but with that said, like, hopefully people come back. But at the same time,
yeah, that's clearly, the thing. They're the only they're going to get better from here. There's no way that they can. There's no way that when they get fully healthy, that the lineup's not going to produce. I know they didn't in the beginning of April and stuff, but what they're just going to get better, which is even more promising because now that they're playing this well and carrying this momentum, you would think that when they start to get Brandon Nimmo, J.D. Davis, Michael Conforto, Jeff McNeil, get these guys back. Tywan Walker, when he comes back now because he's hurt too. Jacob DeGrom should be back very soon. I mean, the team is just going to get better and stronger, and it's going to be like a mid-season acquisition when you get a guy like Syndergaard in your rotation and Carrasco. I mean, things are going to be looking up for the Mets. I mean, they are looking up now, but once you get some of these guys healthy, they're really going to get into the swing of things and be a really, really good team this summer.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully we don't have another June swoon like they seem to have every year, which we avoided last year because they
We don't have Mickey Callaway anymore.
Didn't have one last year because the season started in July. So,
yeah, so we got rid of that.
The June swoon was just the whole season, actually, as it turned out. But hopefully not another one of those. So hopefully everyone can get healthy. And yeah, I think that pretty much does it for this week's episode of Cohen's Corner. Thanks so much for listening along with us as we talked about the Mets injuries, asked each other some trivia questions, talked about a lot of no-hitters that have happened in baseball this year, and professed our collective love for Tomas Nito, who has been incredible this year. I cannot stress this enough, how much my fandom for him has increased over the last few months.
We'll see. I mean, like we keep saying, their backups are filling in great and should be a really fun summer. So I'm very surprised that with the way the season's gone, we're in first place, but hey, we'll take it. But all right, until next week, we'll talk to you guys soon. As always, you can follow Elizabeth on Twitter at NYMFan97. You can follow myself at Giblin_Jake and the podcast itself at Cohen's Corner Pod on Twitter. So we'll talk to you guys soon, and stay well.